Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Gig Fighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload a episode today usually once a week, once every 2 weeks, just kind of depending upon the flow of the kickboxing news. Also, the other way you're listening to it is through the iTunes. Just enter Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine and the show pops right up. You can also use Lord Gaul, which was my username back in the day when I first fell in love with the sport, K1 fans, K1 USA, Cockatoogie, and so on. So gonna go ahead and jump right into it. Got a big show going on today because we've got a Dynamite event tomorrow, which is, you know, it's not as prestigious as I thought it was going to be when I saw that they were going to mix, you know, MMA and kickboxing, but it should still be a lot of fun, in particular with the light heavyweight title. I got a lot of news to talk about. I'm going to go ahead and try to go all over the world with my kickboxing and Muay Thai show today. I'm going to go ahead and start in the stadiums. Going to go ahead and there were several fights over the last, you know, since my last podcast. I'm going to go ahead and pick out about 4 or 5. First of all, I want you guys to all take your time. Go to YouTube and then go to Muay Thais, M-U-A-Y-T-I-E-S. Go to his page, so subscribe. Definitely check him out. He uploads stuff on a regular. He's been huge, you know. He is one of the most important aspects of my show because it does gives me the best opportunity to give you guys the stadium fights on a regular basis. And I'm not always able to watch them all, but I'm do my best to watch a lot of them and to do all that I can to continue to help the growth of interest into stadium Muay Thai. And it's funny because and another thank you to all the people with the kind words over the Tiffany Von Seuss highlight that I put out. Tiffany Von Seuss making Muay Thai her own is I put it out on YouTube, or excuse me, on Vimeo not too long ago, on Monday actually, and I posted it on my Facebook wall. It's also on Twitter for those who haven't seen it, so just go ahead and look at my Twitter wall. You can also go to Tiffany's and you'll see it pop right up. But I bring up Tiffany because she, when I interviewed her, you know, the first time was about 4 or 5 years ago. It was before she'd really started kicking off in Lion Fight and getting the bigger fight opportunities. She'd just become a part of the promotion. But she mentioned, you know, I brought up, like, what is your goals? Do you want, you know, what do you want Muay Thai to take you? Traveling the world and you know, international opportunities. And I brought up some fights that I thought maybe she could have. And she said, yeah, you know, that's the goal. I really, you know, she goes, you really said it. That's really what I want to do. I want all that. So she has just, you know, of course, won the Lion Fight title back after losing it last year. She's now put away, you know, a little bit of money now thanks to, you know, her Lion Fight contract. But she just made it to Thailand for the first time, and she went to the Raja Stadium, and one of the biggest things that she was talking about was she just felt inspired. She felt like she's watching the sport for the first time. It's like you dream it, you train it, and you go out there and you experience it with your eyes, and that is what I'm hoping to do. I remember, you know, when I seen, you know, the first people used to start posting things online, I really, really wanted to just kind of experience it because I've been to Lumpini Stadium before and I just kind of wanted to experience it just through video and try to keep up with the sport. And I remember at the time the names were too much and I couldn't follow it. But then someone said something that their goal for posting videos all the time would be that people would be motivated to go to Thailand and then go see the shows live for themselves. And I'm glad that in Tiffany's story that became true. And I'm hoping that in your stories it becomes true because no matter what, I think everyone should take a fight career at some period of time. You should go to Thailand. You got to experience it. You got to experience the culture. You got to experience seeing the athletes get up in the morning, put those miles in, put those rounds in the bags. And the main thing I want you to see, but you know, outside of the fights, I want you to see how much work they do on their own when you're in Thailand. Because a lot of people just think, you know, you get some pad holder forever and no, basically you get your pad holder for 3 to 5 rounds, and then you find somebody to do your clinch work, and then you do all your bag work. So much of this is pushing on their own. So I want to do my best to sell these athletes to you so that you guys can sit down, you know, go to Muay Thais, go subscribe, and then you can see what's posted on a regular basis so that you can follow the sport and you can fall in love with it the way that I do. So my goal is to keep pushing it, keep getting it out there, and then keep getting messages like I got when one day one of the followers said that they weren't really into full rules Muay Thai, and then I started to explain things and tell them where to find fights, and it got them into it. So I hope that I'm able to accomplish that again today. I'm going to go ahead and start off with one of the legends in the game, and Sam A. Sam A versus Kasuek. Sam A, as it sounds, S-A-M-A. K-A-S-U-E-K for Kasuek. And Sam A really put on a clinic. You know, when you're dealing with Sam A, you're talking about the left leg. You're talking about one of the most skilled guys fighting backwards in the game. And not only was he able to score clean offense, score his elbows, he almost fights at like this, you know, nonchalant speed where he never, no matter how hard the opponent is pushing, Sam A keeps the same pace, But adding to his dominance, because he's able to score, you know, he's really tricky with his foot sweeps to get people off balance, his turns, but really the left leg, and he got the elbow going in this one. You know, the left leg killer is kind of what you know Sam A for. But in this one, not only was he dominant, he also caused a cut. And as they went down the stretch of the fight, he just, both guys really, Kasua kind of called it in kind of early. No need to take any further damage. Go ahead and recover, and then you can provide for your family a month later when you get the opportunity. But all Sam A, too slick, too skilled, and then you get the cut. It's just pretty much over with on the scorecards. Next fight I want to talk about is Jumpa Chit as he takes on Pakulek, and it's J-O-M-P-I-C-H-I-T. And he takes on Pakulek, P-A-K-K-A-L-E-K. And this was a solid battle. Jumpa Chit gets the win here. I thought that he did some good stuff in the clinch. I thought he did some good stuff as far as dictating pace. And it was one of those fights where it's like both guys are guys that I've seen before but haven't been in that kind of match where I'm like, you know, or been in that kind of fight where I'm like, okay, follow this guy, follow this individual. They're going to keep providing this level of entertainment. They're going to keep providing this style. I just thought that it was a good competitive fight. It wasn't one of the more notable ones that I watched when I was prepping for this show, but I did think that it was solid entertainment, so definitely give that one a shot. And Jumpa Chit gets the win in this one. I'm going to go ahead and move to probably my favorite of the fights, Singh versus Sprinter. Singh, S-I-N-G versus Sprinter, S-P-R-I-N-T-E-R. And I've mentioned Sprinter on this show before. All entertainment, really brings a very entertaining brand of Muay Thai, because he's big on letting his elbows go and letting his hands go and scoring. And Singh is a guy who I've very rarely mentioned on this show. I've seen him pop up here and there, but he's not a guy who I've brought up consistently. But he definitely blew me away with his clinch in this fight. First of all, the third round is like, I say this all the time, there are some fights that just reflect the sport at its best. There are sporting events where you're like, okay, if you want to know about my sport, you need to watch this, you know, this game, this match, this fight in combat sports, of course. And in this one, the third round of this fight reflects Muay Thai, stadium Muay Thai at its best. You get a little bit of everything. You get Sprinter letting his hands go, looking for his big single kicks, you know, combinations, and he looks for elbows when he gets aggressive. You got Singh, who's also playing the game, scoring, you know, in distance with his kicks, closing the distance, scoring in the clinch, also exchanging in the elbows. And round three was just an entertaining fight, and you're like, okay, we're going to be in for a ride. Round four, Singh was the one who was doing all the riding, as he absolutely dominated Sprinter in the clinch. There was a period of time where he had Sprinter locked into the clinch, and he maybe just kept spinning Sprinter around and scoring knees for, I want to say, 15 seconds to 20 seconds, to just kind of, you know, I'll go ahead and spread that. It was longer in my mind than I remember. I think it was about 15 to 20 seconds where he just spun around, kept scoring, and then he finished with a tie dump. That was the theme throughout. Singh would close the distance, dominate Sprinter in the clinch, and then get a dump on the end of it. There was a period of time where after, you know, being dumped twice, Sprinter tried to come back with one of the big single kicks, but it was caught, and Singh dumped him again. Pure domination in the clinch. Singh goes down the stretch, just, you know, we put it on the autopilot in the fifth round, but if you ever want to see someone dominate a fight in the clinch, you want to watch Singh versus Sprinter. And Singh in the red shorts absolutely takes it to Sprinter. And then I'm a big fan of Sprinter. Like I said, he brings that fight, lets those elbows go. I want to see him compete all the time. But man, I was very, very impressed with how dominant Singh was in the clinch. Really, really good stuff. For those of you that like your KOs, we got our KO fix from, again, this is another all the fights I've mentioned so far have been, three have been New Limpini. One was Rogers Stadium. That was the Jumpa Chit versus Pakulek fight. That was Rogers Stadium. But the others have been New Limpini so far. Another New Limpini fight I want to talk about is Krubsted, who took out Rockchart, and it's just K-R-O-B-S-U-D versus Rock Chart, RAKCHART. And there's not much to say because it's just a brutal KO, but I want you guys to know about it. Basically, what happened is as the action starts, Rock Chart fires a high kick, and the high kick just gets like above the guard and scores okay. You know, Krabzic gives a nod and then fires his own head kick back, and then that one gets through, and that one has Rock Chart in trouble. Rock Chart's able to get out, you know, of the round after kind of, you know, going down and getting back up really quick. They don't really have flash downs in Muay Thai, so if you go down, you get back up. They don't really call it a down. They just call it a really strong, significant score. It's when you're on, you know, when you're dazed that they actually throw that count in there. And when he got back up, they go into the second round. You can see that Rock Chart still hurt, so he's going to close the distance, get in the clinch, buy himself some time. But very subtly, you got to pay attention to this. Krabzic in the clinch scores a knee, and as he looks to position his left elbow, where he's standing, he won't score. So you're going to watch him just do a little subtle step back to create space. Then he fires the left elbow. It scores big. Rock Chart goes down and a big-time KO. I think I want to see more of Krabzic before I can tell you anything about his future prospects. But whenever you see somebody who's got, you know, in his situation, Krabzic's got Fairtex on the other part of his name. And whenever you hear that, there's always the opportunity that if they are successful, they can fight international down the road, because Fairtex is really big about, you know, bringing fighters. They've got gyms all over the world, and they like to do the international thing. So we'll see what comes from him moving down the road. Next fight I want to talk about is Singdam versus Manasek. Singdam, S-I-N-G-D-A-M, guy I've mentioned in the show several times before, versus Manasek, M-A-N-A-S-A-K. And that took place in Raja Stadium about a week ago. And this is one of those things where you should really pay attention to the most significant score, and then you should really pay attention to the fact that knees and kicks are valued more highly than punches. In this fight, Singdam, I think he understood, you know, at this fight took place at 138 pounds. This is probably one of the bigger fights that I've ever kind of talked about on the show when it comes to the stadiums. The 141 is not what it used to be. I want to say even up to 141 used to be pretty prestigious weight class. I mean, still got some notable athletes and so on, but like it produced a lot of the guys who would go on to fight at 54 and kickboxing down the road. 141 has a pretty strong history to it, but as of late, there hasn't been as many guys that, you know, internationally I've paid attention to. I think that the main guys that you should pay attention to when you focus on the stadiums would be guys who weigh between 126 pounds and 135 pounds at the max. Like in there, you're going to see some of the best fighters in the world, the highest level fighters in the world. And those guys are going to go hit up the international scene and really compete with some of the best. But that's one of the fights that I really wanted to bring up as something that you guys should pay attention to, or that weight class is something you should pay attention to. As far as the fight goes, Singdam, who is, you know, fought everybody there is to fight. You know, this guy has, you know, Kit Moon 9 gym, has been, you know, repping them for, you know, his career, and he's been going against the better fighters in the world. But it's really important that you see, I think he understands that he's got a bigger, stronger guy, and he is super aggressive with his boxing in this one. And he scored a lot of big shots with his hands, and he scored single kicks. But for the most part, when they were in space, he was trying to score with his hands and score the kicks. Manasek's game was just to slowly slow the pace down, get in the clinch, get dominant position, and really look to score, you know, dominant knees, score really well. For example, you know, when I was thinking about the Jumpachit fight earlier, one of the more interesting things about that is Jumpachit would get into some really good clinch positions, but even though Pakalek was, you know, kind of tied up and beneath him, Pakalek was still competitive as far as throwing the knees back, you know, back and to keep himself in a fight. He's able to you know, despite not being in the dominant position, despite having his arms tied up sometimes, Pakalek was able to do some pretty interesting things. But Jumpachit, who dominated where the clinch action took as far as where his hand positioning was, he won that fight. In this one, Singdam was trying to, you know, cut off the strength of Manasek, who was just so big and strong. They look just compared to the other fights. Like, if you were to watch five fights on Muay Thai as you're going down his, you know, his list of videos, they almost look like monsters compared to everybody else. They're good-sized guys. But when you look at Singdam and you look at his effort, you could see that he was really trying to score in space as much as possible. But the problem is the punches don't score as much as the kicks and the knees. And in this one, Manasek would have, there was a really good kick that he fired with his right leg where, I want to say it was right leg, I can't remember exactly. It might have been the left leg. But basically what happened was, as Singdom is looking to engage in the clinch, score, engage in the clinch, but this kind of play a distance clinch game, not get into it full, he had Monoslag just stood back and just fired a kick to the body, and immediately Singdom started playing with light boxing to buy himself some time. It's one of those moments where I was like, wow, that one got through clean, that one scored big. And Monoslag was able to dominate the clinch position, score more knees, turn his opponent, have a lot of success in the clinch, and then when the cards were red, Singdom was not able to do enough to go over the taller man. And this is one of those things where you're going to hear it a lot. You go to Thailand, especially here from foreigners, as they say, who wins the fight or how do you score fights? And I remember I was explaining to somebody how I thought they scored fights, and one of the other guys, and I have it happen all the time, somebody said the sentence, the taller man always wins. And when I first heard that, I didn't think that it was in terms of physical height, which is what I believe this person said. And a lot of people do believe that they mean physical height when I hear that, because a lot of times a taller person does win. But Sanchez wouldn't exist in the world if it wasn't for if the taller man was the one that won all the time. So I thought that there was a chance that maybe lost in translation over a period of time, that the taller man is something that really the advantage goes to the person who dictates the fight more, because that's what I always, whenever you ask me, you know, how they score stadium fights, I'm always going to say it's the fighter who dictates the fight. It's the person who they can, you know, walk you down. You're always going backwards. They're always going to be like, okay, where are you going to walk down by this guy? And if you're going to dominate in the clinch, they're like, okay, you're going to dominate in the clinch. And if your body kick scores the most significant, they're saying you're kicking, but his kicks are moving you. That's the sort of thing, like Monoslag, like I said, mentioned, he fired a kick that as soon as it scored in Singdom, it shut down his offense for a moment. That's what I thought, that there's a chance the taller man could mean. And lost in translation, people just figured that it went to the tallest person, because a lot of times the tallest person gets on the scorecards. But definitely something to look at and search for yourself and decide what you think that it can mean. But clearly, taller man is something that you are going to hear if you go to Thailand. You're going to hear, mostly from a Westerner, you're going to hear them say, the one that wins the fight is the taller man. As opposed to somebody from, you know, Thailand, they're going to say, first of all, the scoring's really hard to understand. That's the first thing they're going to say. But then other than that, diversity, strikes, getting cut, all that kind of stuff is valued very, very highly in the scoring in Thailand. So definitely check out Singdom versus Monoslag if you want to see where a guy who clearly scores, particularly the fifth round, outscores with the boxing, is going to lose the fight because he was dominating the clinch and with body kicks. Going to go ahead and move to the last fight I'm going to talk about of these fights. Didn't want to do them forever, for example, but I did want to talk about them. There was like, I don't know, 13 fights since the last show that I did, so I couldn't get them all in, but I wanted to focus on a few in particular. Not a rare draw, but, you know, it's been a while since I've talked about a draw on the show. Pantoyak, the, you know, fighter of the year, coming off of, you know, he had a great streak, and I think he was, 12-0 in the streak, and then he came off, but he had lost, and he bounced back with a win. He takes on Superlek in one of the more interesting clinch battles that you're going to see. Pantoyak is a Pantoyak, and Superlek, Superlek. I want you guys to go ahead and watch this fight and watch the different types of clinch that you're going to see, because basically what it comes down to is, I feel that Pantoyak does a really good job of getting in dominant clinch spots and getting the higher clinch positions, putting him in position to score some really good knees. But Superlek always pushed him, used his strength and pushed him into the corners and definitely looked to score knees there and neutralize Pompeyuk's offense. When they got any kind of space, Pompeyuk had scored pretty good with the body kick, and then he prepared for the clinch because Superlek was just going to come in every single time. You know, like that was his game plan was, I'm going to win this fight in the clinch. I'm going to push you against the ropes, push you into the corners. I'm not going to let you get your offense off. I'm not going to let you just, you know, fire that left leg and just get up on the scorecards. And you're going to see a lot of different variations of how they play the clinch, because one thing, and it's another thing that you'll see in the Jampichit fight, it's the clinch that they play, it's not necessarily over-under. Sometimes you'll see somebody over the armpit and then try to lock their grip on as their left hand, for example, could be under the armpit and around the back, and the right arm will be behind the neck and connecting, and then they'll drop their head and they'll try to score clinch in there. Or you'll see one arm playing at the neck and the other arm fighting in the bicep or the crook of the elbow, and that's a real common one. In this fight, Pompeyuk had a lot of opportunities where he got both of his hands in both crooks of the elbow. So both of the turn of your elbow, so right by the end of your bicep. Pompeyac was able to get both of his hands in there. And as he did that, he was able to score some offense and push back. All Superleck would do to counter was he'd drop his own head and then he'd use his knees to rotate. You got to have good hips and you got to have good knee rotations. If you watch enough stadium fights, you'll realize how many different ways there are to score knees. And if you want to add to your game of how to angle them, how to be sharp, how to be in the clinch, even if you're not a kickboxer or a Muay Thai guy and you're listening to the show, even if you're an MMA guy, watch these guys because you're going to get in over-under positions. You're going to get in positions where you're using head control in the cage, and you're going to be able to use the different knees and angles that these guys provide. Superleck and Pompeyac, they were able to do this, and they put on an entertaining fight. The fourth round had Pompeyac come out and score a dump like right away, and I was like, okay, that's going to be huge on the scorecards, and then Superleck came back and got a dump of his own. His wasn't as clean because Pompeyac was able to kind of fall into the ropes, but I thought that as close as it was and as competitive as it was, when it got to the fifth round, I thought that the deciding moment would be when Pompeyac leaned back as Superleck threw a body kick with his right leg, and he caught it with his right arm, and then he fired a switch kick to the body behind it. And then as he, you know, Superleck fell into him for the clinch, he kind of scored a knee right away. It was such a clean, slick moment. I thought that was going to be the decider, but Superleck continued to push the pace, score some knees, and then both guys decided that they would lift their hands up and wait to see what the judge said, and the judge said draw. So that's what the judges came to, so it's one of the more interesting draws. It was super close. I thought that that moment, as I said, was enough to win it for Pompeyac, but expect these guys to fight in Raja again in 1 month. So that's my stadium breakdown. Again, there are other fights that you could watch. There were four or five that I didn't get to as I was doing my recording, but I wanted to make sure that I spent some time on it, but not all the time on it. But definitely check out the stadium shows. Going to go ahead and go to Tatneft now. And Tatneft in Russia is something that I don't talk about all the time because I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of their rules. And what I mean by that is they have you have three rounds to score a down or a KO. So if you watch Tatneft, there's usually a lot of KOs. So you get three rounds to score one of those two. If you are unable to score one of those, they go to an extra round. And the winner of the fourth round is the winner of the fight. It's because of that weird scoring that I'm like, you know what? I don't know if I'm a big fan of people, you know, either one-sidedly getting a guy you're better than and scoring a KO, or you waiting for a decision. Are you losing a fight? Like there was a fight where clearly, if it's scored regular, you would make the argument that there was a down scored against you know, one of my favorite prospects that I've talked about on the show many times. Alim Nabayev, and Alim Nabayev in this particular fight on Tatneft, he was winning the fight, and he gets scored on a down is scored on him because he's throwing a knee, and he gets caught over the top, and he falls down, and they call it a down. He then proceeds to get up and absolutely dominate the fight for the next 2.5 rounds. Not even close, one-sided whooping. But when they go to the cards, because he was downed, he loses the fight. That can't happen. The winner of the fight should be a reflection of the fight. That's what it should always be. I will always have trouble with scorecards that don't give the winner to that one that reflects the action that I just saw. So if the action that I just saw says that, okay, it's clear that this one fighter won, that guy better be the winner. So if your rules allow for somebody to score, you know, not a KO, but a down, and that down to be the difference despite the fact that they got, you know, Hulk smash for the rest of the round, I can't have that. I can't have one guy put on a tie fight performance and one down be the difference between him winning and losing. So that was one of the reasons why I decided, you know what, I won't talk about them as much. But every once in a while, they're going to produce some, you know, they're always going to produce KOs because they get some one-sided matchups sometimes. But it's important that I pay attention to them because a lot of the new up-and-coming Russian stars end up on their card. They have talent on their rosters, and they produce a lot of elite athletes. Those athletes just got to get more international opportunities. But it starts by getting on the Tatneft. Anatoly Moiseev is a guy I've talked about several times before. He gets a victory over Rosario Presti. Presti's a guy I've talked about before. Presti's got, you know, 100-plus fights. Italian fighters had great international opportunities. Hasn't always won, hasn't fought the highest level, hasn't been, you know, a K-1 or Glory mainstay. I think he got a one in Showtime fight before. I think he's fought an Infusion once before. But he's fought a lot of guys, traveled all over the world. He's made a sport of it. And if he opens his own gym one day, he's going to have, which I wouldn't be surprised if he's got one open already. But if he decides that that's what he's going to make his money off of, he's going to have a lot of great stories, a lot of great experiences, and so on. in this fight, again, Anatoly Moiseev, after three rounds, very, very clear that he won. To the point where at the end of the third round, the last 15 seconds, he just tried like four or five jumping, spinning hook kicks to see if he could score them. And I think it's because of the scoring. I think he knows, all right, don't go ahead and do anything that could get me injured. He played with, there was a period of time in the second round where I thought he got his combination to hook game going. Presti, understanding the rules, threw on flurries, threw with body shots, but really didn't look to do anything big. Anatoly Moiseev was the one who did the majority of the scoring, where Rosario Presti did the majority of the walking him down, looking to kind of dictate where the fight, taking something out of the gas tank. And then come round four, the extra round, which shouldn't be needed but was needed, it was way closer than I thought it was going to be. You know, I thought Presti scored in some moments. I thought Anatoly Moiseev got his combination low kick going. It was close, and I know as it went to the scorecards, Presti knew that he had put some good offense in together, at least some good volume in together, and Moiseev didn't look as confident. He never usually does. He's usually kind of pretty laid back, even if he wins by KO and so on. But like when the scorecards were read, he was pretty ecstatic that he got the win because it was closer than he wanted it to be. They got a card coming up, as you guys probably heard before. We are going to have the return of the Glory brand to Italy. And why are we having a return to Italy? Because who's a bigger draw in Italy than Giorgio Petrosian? I've watched Giorgio Petrosian fight several times. I've watched him fight live. I've watched him main event fights. In Italy, I watched him fight. And he is going to need an opponent. And they're probably going to pick somebody who's been in the game for a while. Somebody who, you know, I prefer they give him someone elite. But they're going to give him a solid opponent. And he, of course, is coming off of a KO victory with the knee over Zhu Yan a couple months ago. Not even a couple months ago. I'd say 3 weeks ago, I want to say. That was at the very end, the 28th of August, I want to say it was. So he's coming off that win. As I pay attention to that card, it's in Europe. They used Anatoly Moiseev once. They got to use him again. I want to see him fight either a Jordan Watson type, anybody who is clearly they could give, him Armin Petrosian, but I don't think that's coming. I mean, if they get Petrosian on that card too, he's not going to fight Anatoly Moiseev. He's a guy that I want to see more. So I want him, Chad Sugden. I would love Anatoly Moiseev versus Chad Sugden. That'd be a lot of fun. But I want him to get on that card. I need them to use him more so that the map of what they're going to do in kickboxing shows, okay, this is an athlete we've used before. Expect to see this guy down the road. We can't have him just disappear for long periods of time because that's what I feel like's happened. So, also, they keep messing up Anatoly Moiseev's record. It said that he was 7-0 on the fight card, Tatna fight card. I've seen more than seven Anatoly Moiseev fights. Now, I'm not saying he's got a bunch of fights, and I'm not saying they got to count all the amateur stuff that he's done. I'm just saying 7-0 is pretty ridiculous. I've seen more than seven of his fights. It almost suggests that this is the only year he's ever met a fighter. He's super talented. I want to see more of him. And this win was just more of a stay busy, keep being active. I want to say it's the sixth time he's fought this year. So hopefully he gets on that Glory card in a couple of months. Next one I'm going to finish with two more fights I want to talk about on this card. Benjamin Adebuyi gets some work in as he gets a victory over Alexander Sadatkin. And Sadatkin was overmatched from jump. Adebuyi was walking him down, scoring in combinations. Sadatkin, shorter guy, didn't have a really strong overhand. I just think that maybe he even lost just by the sight of Benjamin Adebuyi. Here's a guy who once competed for the Glory Heavyweight Championship. He is the guy who had a great run in Super Combat where he beat a lot of elite named guys. Alexander had lost before this fight began. Like, I didn't feel like his effort was a guy who really let his hands go, let his combinations go. It's one of those fights when him and his coach look down and they go, okay, if we get the opportunity to go against a guy like this again, let's go out guns blazing. Because I really felt like he just walked to the ropes and he looked for singles here and there. And Benjamin just walked him down, scored big body kicks, played with his switch stance and his step-up knees. And he was able to score it down in the third. And then right before, in the very last second, they called it with a standing eight, a standing count with 1 second left in the round, the ref called it. And I think Alexander, he was thinking, man, I wanted to go the distance. I would have lost to go in the distance. I didn't want the stoppage, but it was one-sided. Adebuyi looked good. I'm hoping that he gets in that Italy card. You know, I got to keep these guys busy, and he can't fight for the title and then disappear forever. So hopefully he gets the opportunity to compete again. In the world of prospects, it's time for you guys to start paying attention to Roman Kryklia, a guy who, I'll spell it out, R-O-M-A-N-K-R-Y-K-L-I-A, Kryklia. This guy, huge, huge guy for the weight class. He fights at 80 kgs. I want to say he's, I didn't get his exact numbers, but I want to say he's like 6'5". Like he is 6'5", 6'6". He's a tall dude. And he came in, scored with a clean body shot, hooks. Daniel Lentes was a Cameroonian opponent. He scored, came out, scored with hooks, body kicks, hooks, body kicks. Daniel tried to close the distance, and then all of a sudden he put on a combination that had, he scored a step-up knee combination, and then he went back to the step-up knee, and when they broke the action, the ref stepped in, and Daniel Lente was holding his head, and I was like, that's it. And sure enough, it was stopped in the corner. He was both cut, and I think he was damaged in his eye, Daniel Lente was. You got to pay attention to this Roman Kryklia guy. I mean, can he make it to 77 kgs, lose to three? I wouldn't rule that out. If he did, he'd be a monster in the division. We're talking about a guy who's in the same division as Alexander Stetsarenko and Nicky Holtzkin and Artur Kashenko. If he could get off three more kgs, if he decided to go up for glory, which I would love it if he got on, again, that Italy card. It's in Europe. I would love to see him fight up at the middleweight class for them. I want to see more of this guy. Good young talent, very, very skilled. Pay attention to the name, Roman Kryklia. I think even if you go to Liverkick, I think even they mention him as a prospect. So definitely pay attention to this guy. He is the goods. Very, very tall. I want to see more coming from him. That's why, I mean, we do some tournaments. Got to get some regional tournaments so some of these guys can. And this was a tournament over a period of time, over the year. You know how TATNF, they do tournaments where they do. Pretty much they do the series of the tournament over several months, you know, and this was the final for a lot of them. There were a lot of titles that were won this night, but Roman Kryklia, definitely pay attention to that name. So won't mention any other ones. You know, Claudio Badoi is a guy from Romania. He was able to get a decision to win another one of the tournament finals at 70 kgs. I'll definitely just mention his name because he fights 70 kgs and that's the weight class that you want to be paying attention to. So, going to go ahead and move from TATNF now, move to some other news. I'll go ahead and save the Bellator thing for last. Hinata defeats Andy Sauer in a rematch at Rebels. Basically, well, the first time Hinata fought Andy Sauer, for those who don't know, Andy Sauer, they met in shootboxing. And Hinata, of course, is known to have a really good kick. His body kick is vicious. His low kicks are vicious. Even Georgia Petrosian once said that he was the hardest kicker that he'd ever gone against. Andy Sauer, the first time they met, Andy Sauer won with a perfectly legal standing choke, which is because it's stand-up, you know, shoeboxing is stand-up valetudo. And Andy Sauer was able to get a hold of the neck and was able to get a choke. And I know it was the last thing in the world Hinata was expecting. He was expecting a kickboxing match, and he was defeated in a shoeboxing match. So I think it's like, I think 5 years? I can't remember the exact date, but it's been a while. You know, been 5 years since these guys got together. This time, it's all kickboxing on the Rebels card, and Hinata defeats Andy Sauer in the rematch. It's weird because Hinata was, in my opinion, going to be the guy. I think he got a win, if I'm remembering correctly, over Mike Zambides, and I remember thinking, you know what? This is the dude to pay attention to. This guy is going to be the one to take the mantle, because we had Masato, and again, no one's going to be another Masato, so I'm not saying that he was going to be Masato, but we had Masato, and then after, you know, we had him, we had Yoshiro Sato, who had already been a veteran full rules Muay Thai fighter, who had already fought different promotions, he'd already fought kickboxing and Super League, and so we had him around, and then Hinata was this young kid who had a lot of skill. Yu Yamamoto was out there, but I was not high on him like I was high on Hinata. I thought Hinata was going to be the truth for quite some time, but guys who just came aggressive, guys who had power, he will always struggle with them, you know. So that's why Andy Ristie's getting a blowout win over Hinata. It's because what can you do against that size and strength? And that's something that Hinata struggled with. But if you try to play the kickboxing game, Hinata will have some moments. And he, again, it shows the inconsistency. There are wins where Hinata, I was like, man, I thought you were going to lose that one. And there are losses where I was like, I can't believe you lost that one. But Hinata was able to put together one of the better wins of his career. Clearly, Andy Sauer, after all those fights, not the athlete that he was, but he can still get some really good wins. And he's had, in the last few years, there's just been inconsistency across the board where he's got some really solid, really fun, entertaining wins, and he's got some really strange losses. But all in all, Sauer is going to pack his bags. He's going to travel the world. He's going to sign autographs, and he's going to fight. And I really like that Andy Sauer is keeping himself competitive, even though he's no longer one of the guys who's a clear top three kickboxer in the world. He's still a very, very good fighter, and Hanada beating him is a very, very big win. So shout out to Hanada, and what do I want to see from Hanada moving forward? I would love to see Glory go back to Japan. I would love to see Hanada get the opportunity to go against a Steve Moxon would be a really good choice for Hanada, like a really good choice. If they were to go to Japan in December, for example, you've already got, he's in Australia, so you can go ahead and do that flight. Time zone wouldn't affect, a Moxon that much. I think Hanada is one of the guys that you want to use. Really hope they do it. So good stuff by Hanada and good victory. Going to go ahead and move to Crush. We're not going to talk about the whole Crush card, Crush 58. Crush is one of the more prominent Japanese brands. And the way that I just mentioned, Rebels is solid. Crush is more notable. They've had a lot of success, had a lot of international fighters come in. It's mostly a Japanese card, but then the main fight, the main event is usually international, the top two cards. So in this particular main event, we have Hirotaka Urabe as he gets a KO, a TKO in the third round against Zhang Shusan. And Hirotaka, it comes down to the fact that him and his brother earlier this year fought for the 60 kg title to see who was the best in the world at 60 kgs on a K1 promotion that had a one-night tournament. We love our one-night tournaments in kickboxing. That's how we get down. We are one-night tournament people. And I was really impressed with how well Urabe was, despite that loss and despite the fact that, it's your brother that you lose to. He's really put together a couple of, good wins back-to-back. This is another one of them. Hirotaka used to be the guy until his brother dropped down. His brother was fighting above his weight class before when K1 had that 63.5 something-something weight class. It's just a weird weight class. 60 kgs, I really like the Hirotaka here. He's one of the elite guys in the world. I always want to see him compete. And I like that he got another international win here. But in the end, it comes down to what's going to happen when he goes against, his brother again. Of course, the Javier Hernandez fight, always fun. I like Hirotaka Urabe, and I always want to see him compete. So hopefully more good stuff from him moving forward. Going to go ahead and head to that Bellator card now. First things first. The live portion of this fight card, like the televised portion of the card, if you will, it's got a fight that it has to have, that makes sense for it to have. Ancelo Calivari versus Zach Mokasa. That makes sense to me. Title fight, 5 rounds, awesome. That fight's got to happen. It's got Paul Daly versus Fernando Gonzalez. Not going crazy. Paul Daly is an elite kickboxer off of resume because he's got two really, really solid wins. I'm down with Paul Daly in kickboxing. I'm down with him fighting and getting on the title. Plus, he's a name. And then, all of a sudden, the third fight, which was originally supposed to be a Glory featherweight title fight, is now been replaced, if I'm looking at this correctly, by Kerryann Taylor Melendez and Hadley Griffith. And if you want to know who they are, Hadley Griffith is just a kickboxer, Muay Thai fighter, but Kerryann Taylor is Gilbert Melendez's wife. This fight, I've got no problem with it being on the card if that's what they want to do. But the fact that you would take a elite fight in the Glory brand, a fight that you can build off of, the featherweight fight that they have between Siak Adamichuk and Anvar Boynazarov, is a fight that you're going to see these two athletes compete in the brand on TV again down the road. It's almost like this is a novelty pick for people who like Gilbert Melendez so much they want to see his wife kickbox on TV. That's a very strange television decision. Now, again, you are who you are. I'm not going to go crazy on people and what decisions they make. And Bellator has been quite clear. There is a certain goal that they have with their promotion. There's something that they're trying to do with the product that they put out. They understand that, hey, everybody, when they think MMA, they usually think UFC, but They're doing a good job putting certain fights together that are entertaining and really show the sport in a certain light. Like, it does a really good job of saying, hey, come watch an entertaining broadcast. That's all we ask. We don't know what you feel about, you know, kickboxing or MMA, you know, us mixing that up together, but I think we can put it out in an entertaining way. We don't know what you think about our main event in MMA, but we're going to have some really solid fights underneath it, and then we're going to have you guys have these showcase fights of athletes that you didn't even think about. We're going to try to put it all together in that way. So I understand them making a decision off of that. Like, I'm not hearing that and not going crazy. Like, that doesn't kill me. And again, as it was mentioned before, one of the reasons why they were led to doing this in the first place is because they lost what was a title fight. Like, they originally had the featherweight title match, who I believe the original matchup on the card was supposed to be Gabriel Varga, and I want to say it was Adamantopoulos, and then I think Adamantopoulos was out, and then I think they moved... They moved it around to Sahir Adamchuk, and then Adamchuk was healthy, and then Varga was out. And then now they moved in Anvar Boynazarov, who just coming off of a really, really entertaining fight with Giga Chikadze. So I think I'm understanding that movement of fight, say, okay, we're going to make a little bit different decision because we no longer have the title fight in play. But the Sahir Adamchuk fight and the Boynazarov fight is still an elite-level kickboxing match that shows the sport really, really well. That's the one that I would want to have on my television broadcast. Them choosing the Kerryann Taylor-Melendez fight, it's just, and again, that's why this fight's on TV. It's because of her. I'm going to go ahead and let it play out, but I'm just saying I am a little disappointed because I very much wanted the elite level featherweight fight on the card. It's just a strange decision, but at the same time, I understand what they're thinking. They're staying with their theme. There are some fights that we're going to put out there that may not make the most sense in terms of the perspective of fighting, but they make sense in terms of the perspective of eyes. And the decision that so many people would like Gilbert Melendez enough to want to see what's going on with his wife in their kickboxing career, it's an interesting one. I didn't see it coming for sure. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is changed by tomorrow. But what I'm looking at says that she's on the televised portion of the card. Going to go ahead and move to Paul Daly versus Fernando Gonzalez. It's simple. Fernando Gonzalez is supposed to lose by KO to Paul Daly. I am not saying that he doesn't have a chance. He's a fighter. He's going to go out there. He's going to compete. But I'm saying that Paul Daly can really crack. And he's got some fights, Favjean, we've got Setsarenko, as I mentioned before. That's a legit top 10 welterweight kickboxing win. And Paul Daly is a guy who Nicky Holtzman was asking for this fight. But they went ahead, they made this kickboxing matchup with Fernando Gonzalez. Paul Daly is going to come out. He's going to throw combinations and kicks, but just sparingly. He just wants to open you up so he can let that big left hook go. I think Paul Daly wins this one by stoppage. Which takes us to the biggest fight of the weekend in kickboxing. As far as this card goes, we've got Salo Calavari as he takes on Zach Mokasa. Salo Calavari, it's simple. He's a very, very skilled fighter. And if you take away Tyrone Spong and you take away Gokhan Saki, it makes sense that he's the best guy in the world. They're still trying to work Glory, still trying to work their contracts. They're still trying to make something else happen. When you look at what they're trying to do with Gokhan Saki, when you look at what they're trying to do with Tyrone Spong, they want to have those guys back. Those guys are just used to getting, you know, big K1 checks. And it only makes sense for a brand who doesn't have that ability to really focus on this level of fighter. Like it makes sense to them, this level of payment for this athlete. Hopefully they'll be able to work something out with Tyrone. Hopefully they'll be able to work something out with Saki, and we can bring those names back. And Calavari, who won the first round against Tyrone Spong before Tyrone Spong took over the fight, he's very, very skilled. The first time him and Zach Mokasa met, I thought that there was a little bit of a technical edge between him where Zach Mokasa was still throwing heat, and Zach Mokasa is still improving as a kickboxer. He's throwing more low kicks. He's trying to mix it all together, but he's a hitter. He's going to close the distance, bite down in that mouthpiece. He's looking to have you looking up at the ceiling. I still lean Salo Calavari. I really do. I just think that Mokasa, you got to believe in his power. You got to believe that he's going to score a shot that's going to get Salo out of there. He very much has the ability to do that. But I got to go, Zach. I got to go Cavallari, despite Mikasa's ability to stop the fight in one moment, because Cavallari has the ability to stop the fight, which he did in the first one with the sneaky high kick. I think it's going to be entertaining kickboxing. I think that it's going to be a fight that you should all make sure you have plans to go see the light heavyweight title fight. I don't know what your thoughts are on that whole card. I'm going to enjoy it. I think it's going to be a solid event. Huge undercard. I'm not sure what all is going to get televised. I'm hoping maybe something ends early and they could slide in my kickboxing match, because, you know, I'm just being that guy right now. I really want to see more kickboxing, but should be a fun event. Definitely check it out. And that is the Dynamite preview. We'll go ahead and wrap the show up with that. You know, there's a K1 event going on. Kamaru Philip Kamaru, one of the guys is going to be fighting that card. I'll go ahead and wait till it's over. You know, do the review of it next week as opposed to doing a preview for it. I also want to say a couple notables. Artur Kashinko was able to get a win over the past weekend. Definitely good to see that he's continuing his winning ways. Clearly, I want him to get back onto the map of kickboxing, fighting in Glory, fighting in K1, fighting in something where people can follow him a little bit better. But congratulations on that big win there. And then definitely want to say that was mentioned that Badr Hari might be getting 3 years. I've been trying to stay away from the Badr Hari news until I get something official, because it's just too much. It's bouncing around too much, too hard to keep up with. So I want to go ahead and make that a little bit easier on myself and not try to follow every, you know, breath of that event. So, but other than that, man, I really want to thank you guys for listening. Please continue to follow kickboxing. Please look for the opportunities to follow these shows. I'll do my best to keep you updated, not only tell you that, you know, what came out, but just tell you where to find it. Most of the stuff's on YouTube that I bring up, so I'll do my best to try to, you know, post fights and whatnot, and another big thanks to Tiffany Von Susten and her efforts and her kickboxing and Muay Thai career. I really enjoyed showing, you know, that her skill set and what she does well and all the entertaining things that she does. And I hope a lot of you guys enjoy that. I'm really thinking about this winter coming up with a highlight series, kind of a history thing for people who hadn't really gotten into kickboxing, don't know why some of us crazies love it so much. And I think that it can portray the sport in a really positive light. So that's what I'm thinking. I'm playing with that in my mind. I'm already starting to put the videos together of all the old school stuff. And I won't go too old, won't be able to do the 80s, but I think I might do something like through the 90s and through the 90s for, you know, first 10 years of K1, and then go ahead and do the next 10 years and then do the last 5 years of kickboxing. So we'll see what happens. But that's what I'm leaning. So I'll be sure to have more highlights and stuff to come. So everybody have a good one. God bless. Peace.